Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest, Mark. He is the owner of a Blue BNC. How are you?
Very good. Thank you very much for having me.
I came across something on LinkedIn the other day in regards to MIBA. Now, we are talking about yacht brokerages, and when I take a look at sort of the qualifications of what it takes to become a yacht broker to begin with, there is hardly any standards anywhere in the world. On two places that I did see, it was California and Florida. In Canada, for example, if you're going out to sell a house, you have 8 months of school that you've got to do, sit your real estate exams, and have a certification. I can't even tell you what MIBA is because there's nothing. You can't find anything.
I agree. I mean, first of all, I'd like to say that we're licensed in the state of Florida. We operate in Fort Lauderdale. We have an office there and we're licensed. We're as well members of the IYBA. I do respect MIBA as an authority, right? I think there's the need in the industry to have a governing body, but I do think that they're not doing things right. I think we've gotten to a point where it needs to be more inclusive. There's always the fact that you mentioned earlier, right, that brokers do not need to have any qualification, certification, or education for them to become a yacht broker, right? And that's correct. I mean, that's what happens in most of the world. For example, here in Spain, in Palma, where I'm at the moment, you can just set up a website, go out and start selling boats, okay, or start selling charters. What happens with MIBA is that they are very scared of those that might do things wrong, right? And they use that to their advantage. So for companies like us, that we've been now operating for over 7 years, we've sold over $30 million worth of charters. Just in the last few months, we've done over $2.5 million worth of charters between the Balearics and we've sold $2.5 million of charters between the Balearics, South of France, the Bahamas, and Greece. I think we've done what we have to do, right? We give them charters. We constantly sign MIBA charter agreements. And we've done what it takes for us to prove that we're a reliable company. We've paid all our charters. We've supported our clients. We've paid all our commissions. But then still, for some reason, they find that we don't qualify or that they shouldn't accept our application to try and work with them and give them more business. And I think that's mainly because they want to keep it for themselves. There's no other reason for that. And again, don't get me wrong. I think there's probably 95% of the MIBA members are very reputable charter brokers, yacht brokers that do operate to the best interests of their clients and try and build a better industry. But I do think as well, there's a small chunk of them that they're just using it to profiteer, right? Where they hold this hostage to Jackfolio or a MIBA contract. They reduce the commissions that we should be getting for the very honest work that we do supporting a client in chartering a yacht or buying a. I think it's time things change. It's time things become a bit more inclusive. It's time as well that all yacht brokers, if you want to cooperate with other brokers or your charter brokers, if you want to cooperate with central agents, I think it's also about time that we get certified, that we get qualified, that we prove that we're insured, that we're regulated, so we deliver the best service to our clients. But again, even in the large brokerage houses that belong to MIBA, that are members of MIBA, you have a large number of individuals that are not members of MIBA, that just because they work in this large organization, they can operate as they want with MIBA's protection. So I also think that's an issue. And when we've seen that, and again, I won't give names because I don't want to badmouth anyone live, but I'd say that we have brokers that work with large brokerage houses, some of the top five in the world, and they just want to take our money because they have access to certain tools that we don't have access to. And there's no reason for us not to have access to them, for us and for many other companies that do an amazing job. I do think as well that the industry is changing, right? I mean, I think a lot of the members think that a client is only a valid client when he charges a yacht for 100,000 euros a week, a 30-meter yacht in Greece, or a 50-meter yacht in the Bahamas for $200,000 a week. The truth is that things are changing. Newcomers need to start somewhere, right? And for example, we cater to clients that will start with us with a 50-foot day charter boat for 3,000 euros, all the way up to this same client that then evolves with us and grows with us and ends up chartering a 50-meter yacht for 300,000 euros a week, as we asked, we have also done plenty of times. So I think they're missing out on a lot as an organization. I think short-term, of course, it plays to their advantage, but long-term, things are changing. And if they don't update themselves, if they don't think forward, they'll be left behind. I don't know how long that will take, but it's definitely going to happen. We've seen this happening in many other industries.
But I still don't really understand exactly what it is they do, except for have a big boat show every year and, I don't know, sort of pat each other on the back and have lots of parties.
Well, I think that's part of it, and that's probably the part of it that we like the least. But at the same time, I do think as well that they provide a set of tools and guidelines that help the industry forward and that protect the owner. The only thing is that same level of protection that should be for the owners and should be for the industry itself it's being used against the non-MIBA members. And that's where things go wrong, right? The moment you use a set of tools that is fantastic, I mean, I think Jotfolio is an amazing tool. I think MIBA contract is fantastic. But the fact that only a few can use it and it takes forever for you to be able to use it means that a lot of us that are not members, we suffer. And that suffering, again, it will not be forever. It's not going to be as it is forever. For us, we have a lot of great MIBA members that are partners that give us a 15% commission. Some of them even higher commissions on their charters. We do great business together. We provide amazing experiences to our clients and everybody's happy. But again, it's also a small number of people that use it against us. And at the end, you're really missing out on these new clients. I mean, clients that come to us and it's like, I want to charge our yacht. What do you have? I've never done this before. We guide them through the process. We make them understand what yachting is. We give them the first experience of yachting, or we help them with that first experience. But then down the line, the moment that client gets bigger, we feel like we cannot continue to service that client in the same way, not just because of the commission, but as well because of the fact that when you involve three parties in a transaction, just because one party doesn't have access to a set of tools, you lose a lot of information and communication along the way. So when you go to that, I don't know, 50-meter motor yacht that is chartering for 300,000 euros a week, and you have us as a charter broker, then you have the company that is accessing your portfolio, and then you have a CA at the end that we do not discover who that person is till we get to sign the contract, what you're doing is that you can definitely have the client but not providing the right information because there's too many people in between. So I do think that's the issue. When it comes to yacht show, it's the same thing. I mean, we're now in the Palma Yacht Show, right? In a month for us, we had to wait for the Balearic Yacht Brokers Association, which is part of MIBA. We had to wait for them to accept us to be able to be part of the show in our own hometown, where we sell a large number of charters, just mainly because the Super Yacht Show, part of our yacht show, is managed by them. Again, we're very thankful that we've been accepted. We're very thankful that we'll have a stand and one of our CA yachts available there, and we're paying a lot of money for it. So we're very thankful that we're able to attend, but other years we have not been able to attend just because they didn't want it, or because they had all the MIBA members, even if they came from Italy, Germany, the United States, even if they don't have a physical presence in the Balearic Islands or in Palma, they were first in the line. So I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's the way things should be. I think if we've proven ourselves with millions of dollars worth of charter contract with MIBA, we should be properly considered in a different way. And the same thing for anybody else. At the beginning, look, we accepted it. 2 years ago, we applied for the first time for a portfolio membership. And in that application, following MIBA guidelines, not all of our contracts were MIBA. They rejected it immediately. And in the guidelines, it says very clear that not all the contracts need to be MIBA. You only need to provide a set of contracts for certain value, for yachts over 20 meters, where I think it's at least a week. We had all of that. We had, I don't know, at least 40 contracts for that year that complied with that. We submitted 10, which is what they requested. They automatically rejected the application. Now this year we did it again, but we said, look, we're going to be smarter. We're only going to give them MIBA contracts. We're going to give them 10 contracts of at least a week on boats over 20 meters, over €500,000 in the last 12 months. We gave it to them. We presented, said, yeah, fine, you comply with everything. You should be able to apply. I said, fantastic. So how can we apply? So, well, the applications are closed in November. That was October, right? So then we get to November. It's like, when can we apply now? Sorry, we've closed the applications again. We'll let you know when that works. January, we go back again. Can we apply now? No, sorry. We're still not accepting applications. February, same answer. March, same answer. So you get to the point, it's like, you just want me to miss out on another season. Well, you want me to continue to operate in a way where I cannot support my clients to their best interest, right? So that's not fair. And yes, that should be considered as a reason with, again, I don't want to say anything wrong, but the reason behind that doesn't make any sense to me. And I don't think it's good for MIBA either. If MIBA continues to behave that way, you will have more companies like us and like many others that will lose respect for the organization. We lose respect for the members of that organization. And then for a while, we'll continue to be the pariah in this industry, but it will get to a point where we won't be the pariahs anymore, but where we will actually be a relevant actor.
It really kind of confuses me because we are now at a stage in the yachting industry that the microscope is on us. And it is time for full transparency. It is time to be open about practices. It is time to show the world that it isn't this ultra secretive thing. And I'm afraid that even with my research, MIBA isn't doing that. And on top of that, not to mention any names, but I did find someone who is a MIBA member, still is a MIBA member, who happened to have been indicted by the US of A for shirking Russian sanctions just this past year, but they still maintain their MIBA membership. I don't understand that.
I don't understand that either. Look, we have companies that are MIBA members that have over us, once we've got into the very end of selling a charger to our client and we've got into the point of signing the contract, they suddenly come up with a usage agreement because that boat is not legal for charter. And then we have to say, sorry, we're not doing that. We won't be working that way because we cannot afford to take that kind of risk, and that's not good for our clients, it's not good for the industry. And again, it's not legal. And that's been a MIBA member. We've had that more than once. We've had MIBA members, again, from very large brokerage houses that tell us, these are my boats in central agency. Then we proceed to offer these boats to our clients. Then these boats are not their boats in central agency. So again, what happens is, if a large brokerage house hires a charter broker that comes from some other company that wasn't a MIBA member, or maybe that charter broker doesn't have any yachting experience at all, maybe it's coming from, I don't know, servicing ultra-high net worth individuals in the banking industry. Suddenly that person seems to be a good charter broker, and that person joins a company with a MIBA membership. Then that person, for some reason that has zero experience, will be telling me, because I'm not MIBA, how I have to operate. And most likely will be making a mistake along the way. And the only thing that differentiates that person from me is that he's a member. That's not the way the industry should go. And that's not the way you evolve as an industry. That person should pass an education, as we do. I mean, we have over 8 charter brokers. We educate them all. We make them operate in a way that is legal, in a way that is helping our clients, that is providing the best experience to them, in a way that they will really enjoy their time on board, so we can have them as clients again. And with these companies operating in that way, it's not to their advantage. It's not for our advantage. You're also hurting the owner. I mean, when you say you cannot access your portfolio, you do millions of dollars of charter, not just a year. I mean, we do it even a month at the moment. So you do millions of dollars and you get to the point where, sorry, you're not a member. We don't know what jobs are available. The owners might want their boats to be chartered as much as possible because they want to get a little return on their investment, or they want to offset, which is normally the case, they want to offset the cost of ownership. And because of us not having access, it's definitely the owner and the crew missing on that charter. And who is that helping? You're missing out on opportunities. You're missing out on new clients. And booking a charter is not something anybody needs. It's something people want. People want to experience that. But if you make it complicated to them, you lose them. They go somewhere else.
One of the other things that I saw on the bit of information I did find was that they state that they are aware of how important crew are to a charter. I seem to think that in the past 10 years, all that anybody in that upper echelon of the good old boy club is doing is running around having forum after forum on why there's no crew, why there's no crew retention. So how can you possibly be paying attention to the crew on board any of those charter yachts if you still have to have 4 or 5 forums a year trying to figure out the same damn question?
I agree. And again, there's a large number of MIBA members that operate yachts that then sometimes they're not paying crew in time, or the crew is suffering. Look, in our case, the way we see that is that the boat, let's say, is 50% of the charter, right? You need to have a modern boat. You need to have a nice looking boat with plenty of toys, providing a great experience. But the crew is the other 50%. And I'm saying 50%, I could tell you 80%. The crew is what makes it different. You can have a boat that's been doing charters for 20 years. That if you have an experienced crew, you have a crew that takes care of the guests while they're on board, you have an amazing chef, and you build amazing experiences and memories for, and they build amazing experiences and memories for the charterers, that boat is a very successful charter boat. And again, the same thing, when you involve too many parties in that transaction, there's zero communication between the client or the client's broker and the captain till everything has been signed and done. And along the way, you might be overselling, you might be downselling, you might be promising things that you cannot deliver. And again, that's because of the lack of communication and transparency. In our company, we have at least 50 WhatsApp groups with different bots, right? At least 50 bots. And every time we get a charter request, we automatically in touch with the captain or the steward or whoever's dealing with us, saying, look, we have this charter. He would like to do this and that. He would like to discover this area and that area. These are the activities that he would like to enjoy while he's on board. How can we do this? And if we don't have that direct communication, I don't mind paying commissions. I don't mind paying a commission. I don't mind, no, it's not me paying. I don't mind having a CA taking a commission. I don't mind having a management company take a commission. At the end of the day, we all have to get paid for what we do, right? The issue is when you make it complicated for information to go from one part to the other. And when it comes to crews, look, I always say the same. I always, when we meet or when we hire a captain, we have a number of boats under management. We have a 50 meter under management for in the central agency in the Bahamas. We have jobs up to 30 meters in management here in the Balearics. And then we have as well jobs up to 30 meters here in central agency in the Balearics. When I meet any of our new captains, or when I meet anybody that, you know, it's a good candidate, I always say the same. Said, look, don't look at me as your typical broker. I'm here with you to provide an amazing experience. and the experience is going to be as good as you are. And it's that communication where we go down to the level and we all respect each other that we can deliver amazing experiences. When you still have, and you say, the old school kind of business where the broker believes himself to be here and the crew here, and then, you know, everybody else down here, that's when you fail. That's when people start to hate you, and that's when you get a bad name as brokers. And I think that's one of the issues of the industry. We have to be more inclusive. We have to understand who's doing the hard work. I'll give you an example. I mean, something that we are doing with our crews is not that we were, of course, they take a tip, or they get a tip from the charter, but as well, when we have a crew that's been too busy on the charter, we offer them relief crews. We offer them the moment, I mean, again, this is the smaller boats. The moment they get back to port after a charter, they can get off the boat, and then we have another crew come on board for the turnaround, for the cleaning, for the servicing, for the preference sheet work, to make all the provisioning. And that's something that other companies don't do. But since we have a large volume of charter, for example, in the Balearics, in both between 20 and 30 meters, if we don't do that, we lose our crew. And the worst thing that can happen to us is to lose our crew, right? I mean, you cannot sell a charter if you don't have a captain. You cannot sell a captain if you don't have a chief steward. You cannot sell a charter if you don't have an engineer on board. So I do think as well that we need to be more inclusive with them. We need to help them understand how things can be done better, right? And how, by sharing information and being more transparent, is better for everyone.
I agree. There has become, it's like a sandwich. If you've got a couple layers in that sandwich, it's a pretty tasty sandwich. But when you start shoving everything in the fridge in between those two pieces of bread, it doesn't taste so good anymore. And that's what's happened in yachting. And of course, crew haven't seen a raise in 20 years. They're no longer getting trained. They're being asked to pay for more and more consistently. And it's that middle area that is raking in the dough. But I tell you, if you don't have crew, I'm sorry, you're not going to have a charter. You're not going to have an owner buying a new boat. You got to keep the crew happy. And it's a very simple explanation. So maybe at the end of the day, is there a need for MEBA? Maybe there's a need for that type of organization, but as an umbrella that is inclusive for all, to act as an independent body to make sure that there aren't any cowboys out there.
Correct. I mean, I think it's necessary to make sure that the cowboys are pushed out and definitely that they cannot operate. The large organizations are actually doing that. There's great people working with them. I think there's as well great small brokerage houses that do an amazing job. But you also have a large number of cowboys that go around that they think that because they belong to X society or X group of people, they can do things their way and they can push the rest of us out. There's a big thing as well with the crew, right? I mean, you see, for example, and that happens as well with English-speaking crews. And don't get me wrong, I know you're Canadian. But we also have the issue where, depending on your nationality, you get paid more or less, right?
Yeah.
And I always say, I mean, all my captains get paid the same, right? We have captains that are French, English, Filipino, Spanish, Italian, and they all get paid the same. It doesn't matter if you speak English with an accent, if your English is better or worse. What matters is your experience and the experience you deliver to your clients. Okay, and that's something that I think needs to change. You see that on larger yachts or with these brokerage houses, you only have one profile on board, and that's your British or English-speaking male that's been doing this for a while and he works on a larger yacht. Then as you go to smaller boats, you have crews from other nationalities. And I also think that's something that needs to change, that we need to be more inclusive. We as well need to make sure that we get more women into leadership positions, you know, on boats. I mean, women do an amazing work as well. They can handle the same amount of work and the same amount of charges that any male can. And they can even most of the time provide a better experience for the clients because they're less conflicted. And they try and always to find a common ground with clients if there's any issue. So I think it works everywhere. I think we need to get out of that model where, I mean, I remember Captain, actually an English captain, very good friend of mine. We went to school together. He always calls brokers Jamies, right? And don't get me wrong, he calls them Jamies because it's always a very similar profile. And it's that group of people that do not allow others to join the industry. And if you, especially in high-end charters, if you don't have a London accent, if you haven't gone to the right school, or if you have not been working for a couple of brokerage houses, then you're not good. And look, I don't think your accent or your provenance actually has an impact in how you service your clients, because right now we have clients from all different nationalities. I mean, this month we sold charters to Kuwaiti clients, to Dubai clients, to Mexican clients, Colombian, English, German, American. So things are changing. But it's not only just your ultra-high net worth individual that lives in London that charges the yacht. There's a large number of individuals that now can do that and that want to do that.
I have to be honest, when I first started in Chiari, every yacht broker that I met was male of a certain age. And it kind of took me back to the 1970s when my dad used to take me to the used car sales lots. It was the same feeling. It was oozy. It was like greasy. And that's what a lot of the yacht brokers sort of portrayed. It's just this air of superiority. And I'm sorry, but in 2023, we have a huge explosion of ultra high net worth individuals that aren't white, middle-aged men. As you said, they are all nationalities, they're all genders. We have a whole array of people now. And the first thing that you ever learn when you go to school for marketing is that you will respond better to somebody who looks like you. It's the same sort of idea. That's sales for you. So when we're talking about the yachting market, the chartering market, the buying market, it's not Russian anymore, baby.
And at the same time, you need to be able to empathize with your client. You need to be accessible. And I make this test every now and then when we hire somebody new. And I always do the same. So look, try and go to one of the large houses and get a quote for a charger. Give them a call and try and get a quote for a charger. Know what's available. It will take you days to get a proper answer. And they have access to systems that they're busy with something else or they're doing something else. In our case, we have Brazilian brokers, we have French brokers, we have Spanish brokers, we have Mexican brokers, we have Greek brokers, both male and female. And we're available 24/7. If you come into our website, it doesn't matter, you know, how much money you want to spend. You can go there, send a message by WhatsApp, send an email, send a booking request. All of that is live. There will always be somebody on the other side of that email or on the other side of that WhatsApp. And if it's a WhatsApp, you get an immediate reply. If it's an email, you will not have to wait more than an hour. It doesn't matter your time zone, right? So that's what makes us different. I mean, what makes us different is somebody, you know, is comfortable, home, their sofa, watching TV. Say, oh, let's see if we can charter a yacht this summer. They come to us and they find somebody that they can talk to. If you come from the US, it would be an American male or female answering that request immediately. If you come from Europe, it would be one of our nationalities, depending on your language, assisting you. But it would be accessible and available. And we will be straightforward. We won't lie to you. We will tell you what we have available and we will try to guide you to make the best decision. And I think that's also something that we see. If you go to one of the large houses, they'll give you what they have, when they want. And if they don't feel from your accent or from your name that you belong to that group of people, you will have to wait very long. I mean, I happen to have a nice name, right? So Mark von Eyrick sounds wealthy. So if I go out to one of these organizations, I will get a reply. But if I send somebody named Marcos Garrido, which is actually my Spanish surname and my name in Spanish, if I would go with that name, it'd take me forever to get an answer. And I've done the test. We've tested here. We've tested it with our colleagues when we want to show them why we're better. At least at that point of delivering a straightforward answer, a fast reply, and letting them know that we're here for them. So I think that's a big difference. I think things need to change. And if you don't open these tools to all individuals, what you have is that you have people that just get annoyed, that find the process to charge you too complicated, find too hard to understand what's going on, what they have to pay, how they have to pay, what's included and what's not included. So, for example, I mean, we always use the word APA, right? So for any our charges, we put APA, very clear, expensive, right? And it sounds stupid to do it, but not everybody knows what APA that means, right? If you have not been in this industry, if you have not chartered in the past, they don't know. So, or we go to other brokers and when they get a price is, I don't know, 50K plus, right? What does that mean? You know, make it easily understandable for everybody to come in and understand what you're talking about, because this is not rocket science. We charter yachts. The truth is that we rent yachts to individuals. Same way you should be able to go and rent a luxury car. You should be able to go and find the answer of how you're going to charter a luxury yacht. So that's really what we try to achieve and what we're achieving, I mean, quite successfully so far.
We are in a modern age now. I can guarantee you that somebody that is going to be spending 300,000 euros, dollars, yen, whatever it is, their currency is, per week on chartering a yacht, they are going to make sure that whatever contracts they signed are looked at by a lawyer, because they didn't get to where they are now by being stupid.
Correct. And you cannot treat them as if they were stupid. And they're also, you know, our new generation. I think you have to break the transaction in two parts, right? There's a part of the transaction when you want to make it accessible to clients. You want to give them as much information digitally so they understand whether it's available or not, what the actual price is going to be for that week, what's included, what's not included, what they can do, what they cannot do, and where they can go. You can digitize a big chunk of the transaction. But then you need the human touch. You need to go to them, assess them, answer any questions they might have, guide them through the process. So yes, I mean, the part of the transaction where you're actually just creating their interest and giving them the right product for the right dates in the right region, you digitize them. Then you assist them and help them choose what's best for them, depending on what the requirements are in the charter, how old they are, what they want to visit. We'll give them different options. If you want to visit a large number of islands in Greece, for example, it's fantastic if you take a catamaran to discover the islands because it's very green and beautiful and you have a very nice wind and little waves to discover that area. But then if you charter a large catamaran, you might not be able to get in the marina. So do you want to get into a marina? Do you want to have that? How far do you want to go? What do you want to visit? You know, how far you want to be from the beach? Because this catamaran might have a draft of Y, that sailing yacht might have a draft of Z, and this motor yacht might have a draft of X. So what do you want to do? How do you want to do it? Are you going with young kids? Do you want to have water to it? What water to it? So that's part of the transaction that you still need to guide them through, because again, there might be newcomers. They might not know what's included, what's not included.
And with that answers. Comes the ability to listen. And right. I find that most of these brokers, it's their way or the highway.
I don't think that applies to everyone. I think there's a large number of even MIBA members that are doing an amazing job. Don't get me wrong. And they're very good at listening to their clients. But yes, you also have that we could call old establishment that operates in a way where this is what we have. This is what it is. My way or the highway, take it or leave, right? And that's not the way it should be. And that's part of our jobs as brokers, to understand what the client is expecting, what the actual budget is, what culinary requirements he has, what experience he has in chartering. Again, what the group of people is going to look like. So I think we cannot digitize all of that. We need to provide that human touch, but we need to empathize. We need to make sure that we understand what they want. And again, sometimes a client might have misunderstood what the charter fee is, right? And if a client is not willing to spend 100 grand and wants to spend 50 grand, still a very good client. You know, you still have to give him an answer. And if that client wants to go green and suddenly you don't have a green boat, well, try and find a green boat that would be available somewhere else or in different dates, but assist him with that or make him understand why that's not available and he should take this option. But that's part of our work. And if you don't get down to the point where you can actually have that conversation with them and you're very transparent, you lose that client. And again, that's also what we're very good at, you know, that the client can come, and I always say the same, there's no stupid question. The only stupid question is the one that goes unanswered. And that's important for them to feel comfortable, because if you call certain brokerage house and they treat you as if you were an idiot because you don't know what APA is, or if they treat you as if you were an idiot because you don't understand that the price is including VAT, you know, well, that might be the case. Maybe that gentleman comes from the US and he doesn't understand what VAT is, and he doesn't understand how that works. So he doesn't understand that we have different VATs in different regions. So that's really part of our work, to make them understand. And that's why we need that human touch. And that's why as well we need standardization of information, standardization of rules. So we make sure that everybody understands how we operate and we don't have to always go through this process of, sorry, for this is that, for this is why, we didn't know this was the case, or we have no access to the captain. We didn't know that this boat has had an extension of the keel and then the draft is. That's why you need to have that free flow of communication to be able to give the best experience. You know, because if not, it can happen. I mean, we've sold, for example, a charger on a catamaran that we didn't know, because we didn't have direct access to the crew or even the central agent. We didn't know that the keels were extended, right? So the keels were extended from 2 meters to 4 meters. So then the draft is 4 meters. The boat cannot access many secluded bays as the client wanted to. So then it was a bad weather week. So that little detail, that if we had access to the crew and the captain from moment one, respecting everybody, paying everybody's commissions, you know, but if we had that access, that client would have had an amazing week on a different catamaran. But then that client didn't have that amazing week. And again, it made a big difference for him, because he wanted to be closer to the beach. He wanted to be able to go with the sea boats to the coast. Now you have the client, whatever, 300 yards out. He cannot do much. He cannot go in. So that's really one of the issues that I see with trying to be that opaque or trying to close information, because it's not just the commission. It's as well the flow of that information. And it's as well protecting the interests of the charter. And we shouldn't forget as well of the yacht owner. The yacht owner, if he puts a boat in charter and he tells you, I want 8 weeks, you have to work to get him that 8 weeks, or these 8 weeks, because that's your job. And for you to achieve that, you need to work with others. Not all the inquiries will come to you. Not all the business will be your own business and you will be able to take all your CA commission. No, you have to work with others.
Well, Mark, I think really at the end of the day, what it comes down to is that there is no place in 2023 for any closed society any longer. And that applies straight across the planet, including yachting. Right. There may be a place for MIBA in the future. If they were to open up and start being a lot more transparent and working in 2023, as opposed to working the same way they would have before the year 2000, things might be a little bit better.
I agree 100%. It's about time things change and evolve. I'm sure MIBA can have a great future if they do, but it's about time they die.
Yeah. They need a few different color faces in the organization and a few more females, as far as I'm concerned. That's one thing I can tell you.
I agree 100%.
Nev, you are just heading into the busy season, and I'm sure that you're looking forward to, well, working a lot this summer.
Yes, I mean, I think it's going to be an amazing season so far. We've already started having charters now in April. We have already guests embarking tomorrow, so that's fantastic. You know, first charter of the season in the Balearics. We're very excited about that. We have, right now, I think at least 5 charters going on in the Bahamas. So far, great year, great start to the season. I hope we continue this way and that we can have an amazing season and that we can all share both the profit, but as well the experience of having that amazing season.
Research now is pointing towards a future of more and more charter, because a lot of these people, they don't want the hassles of having to pay for a boat 12 months out of the year.
The industry is changing, and our generation wants things differently. They want things accessible, and they want them to be transparent.
Yeah, well, there's definitely a good future for you there, my friend. And do keep in touch, and I wish you all the success at the Palma Yacht Show that you've finally gotten into this year.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Ria.
You've been watching another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My guest has been Mark from Blue BNG. If you have any questions that you would like to ask Mark, please do send him a message. We'll provide his information below this interview when it airs. My name is Ria. I have been your host. We'll see you again next time.